It's yet to be decided whether Trump is the personification of the American dream and, for some, the American nightmare, but it's clear that Donald Trump is in the biggest fight of his life, and he earned the right to be in it. Despite all that, tonight he sits down with me. I'll put a flashlight up his kilt and probe him about his golf empire, his New York City upbringing, and whether or not his holiness will leave him fired or hired to run the free world. Now, for someone who's been living, say, on the dark side of the moon for the last year and I've just returned to Earth, what would you say to them?
I'm running for president. I just won the nomination, and we had 17 people, governors and senators, et cetera. They were all competing, and I was able to knock them off, and it's a good feeling. It's sort of like a golf tournament, bing, bing, bing.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of fun doing it. I have tremendous support, and we're doing well in the polls. We're pretty much even, and we haven't spent money yet, which is nice. It's supposed to be an asset if you can do that without spending money. And I think we're going to have a good result in November.
As we come into the convention, you know, in Cleveland, let me frame your campaign quickly. You're going to make America great again. You're going to build a wall. Our leaders are idiots. Our trade deals suck. Hillary's crooked. And you're really rich. Is there anything else you can add?
No, those are pretty good points.
Pretty much got it.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's, hey, look, we have to have borders.
Yeah.
We don't have borders. People are pouring in, and we're going to do something about it, and we're going to be fair. And a lot of people are going to come into the country, but they'll come in legally. And the other things are the other things.
The border and other things have polarized the American electorate and bulldozed the landscape of politics in 2016.
We will make America great again.
Since the Donald first burst into the national spotlight in the 1980s with his best-selling Art of the Deal, he's projected himself into the center of popular culture with a zeal that's both fascinating and outrageous. His self-styled brand is unabashed opulence.
I'm really rich. I'll show you that in a second.
And headline-grabbing candor.
The American dream is dead.
Everything that Donald touches is bigger and blingier than yours. From his wife and children, to his towering digs in Manhattan, his real estate developments, hotels, books, media ventures, and golf courses. He has his articulate endorsers.
He has shown himself to be tough and strong. He's shown himself to be a fighter.
And impassioned detractors, too.
A small, insecure money grubber who doesn't care who gets hurt.
Yet it is entrepreneurial spirit like Trump's that built America.
America, America, America first.
And his campaign to win the White House is by far the grandest pursuit of his lifetime. Do the kids and Melania, do they like the unscripted Trump, or would they like to see more of the, you know, the teleprompter stuff?
So it's an interesting question. I give rallies, and we'll have 25 and 35,000 people. And if I ever used a teleprompter speech, the people would say, what's going on here,
yeah,
right? So we do very freewheeling, and we have a tremendous time. And everybody loves it in the stadium. But in terms of television, it probably doesn't look as presidential.
Yeah.
You'll have 35,000 people. Can you imagine if you stood up and you did it? I just did a teleprompter speech just now, just left. And it was very well received. Probably more presidential. But really, there's a time for both. I think there's a time for both.
Yeah.
If I would ever use in a stadium where you have 35,000 people and I'd stand up with a teleprompter, I think the people would laugh and then leave. The big question is, with the Republican National Convention coming up, am I going to use a teleprompter or not? And I don't know if it's ever been done without essentially a teleprompter.
Is that a game time decision?
I'd love to do it actually without a teleprompter. But, you know, the one thing is I have a very good memory, but you have many, 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 many points.
Points to hit, yeah.
And I want to hit every point.
The handlers, everyone behind the scenes, people that help you write speeches, publicists, you know, do they worry about you wandering off the reservation? You know, the thought of, oh, my God, his wheel is spinning, but his hamster has left.
Oh, yeah, I could see. You know, I mean, to be honest, you're out there alone. You're out in the wilderness, and you're standing on this massive stage, and you're surrounded by tens of thousands of people, and you don't even have notes. You don't have anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see
nobody does
something,
that.
But no. I think nobody does that. Yeah.
No.
I think, I'm proud of doing it. You know, to me, when they say, oh, the teleprompter is a talent, the real talent is being able to stand out there and do what I do. It's a much greater talent.
But, you've staged 15 campaign events on your own properties? You know, in the presidential race, will you continue to use your own real estate to do it?
But I own properties that are so presidential. You know, yeah. I own a big club in Los Angeles, Palos Verdes.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
Which is on the ocean. 700 acres, like, on the ocean, right on the Pacific Ocean. It's one of the most beautiful golf courses in the world. And I mean, this is, every hole is on the ocean, or at least a view of the ocean. And it's carved down towards, so it's carved in. Mm-hmm. So if you're on a hole that's furthest away from the ocean, you still, all you see is the ocean. This place is amazing. And then I own one in Washington, D.C., where we have the PGA Seniors Championship next year. This is a course that's on the Potomac River. The entire 800 acres on the Potomac River, the entire stretch of the Potomac River. It's incredible. And these would be great places to have presidential rallies, but we'll see. I mean, I might use them.
Tell us about your recent trip to Scotland for the reopening of Turnberry. A source, an unlikely source, you might say, has told me that the changes you've made are brilliant. Tim Fincham.
Oh, wow, that's a great honor. Tim's a good guy. For many, many years, they've wanted to do these changes. You know, that incredible coastline doesn't change.
Yeah, but
maybe
for
it
decades,
did a million years ago, but for literally decades, they've wanted to make those changes, and especially in hole 9 and hole 10 and hole 11. And, you know, hole 11 was a little bit not so exciting, and now it's one of the most beautiful holes in the world, probably. Yeah. And hole 9, I still think that that has to be maybe the greatest par 3 in the world. And Gary Player once told me, he said, you know, every time I played that hole, I'd say, no, the green has to be over there
next to,
and it has to be a par 3. So it's now 245-yard par 3, and it's all over the coast, and we're getting rave reviews.
You've done something with the lighthouse at Turnberry?
Yeah. Well, the lighthouse is an incredible landmark. Built many, many years ago, and just, you know, so historic and so much history. My son, Eric, who's very good at construction, I put him in charge of the whole job, and he did a job on the lighthouse, and now it's two incredible suites. So people can stay out there by the lighthouse and stay in the lighthouse with the waves crashing onto it. It's incredible. And it's a halfway house because it happens to be at the end of the ninth hole.
Yeah.
So on the lower floor, we built really a beautiful restaurant and halfway house. And I think people are going to absolutely love it. And the Scottish government has been incredible. They worked with us long and hard on getting approvals because it's a total landmark. And they really wanted to see something done. And they were so incredible. And the community has been fantastic. It's really been an amazing love fest because everybody loves Turnberry. It's the favorite course. Like when you say Tim Fincham, he's told me numerous times his favorite course in the world. So it was time that somebody did something.
I grew up looking at that lighthouse across the Irish Sea. You could see it from my bedroom window in Northern Ireland. You know, so it's kind of cool what you've done with it.
It's pretty cool.
Now, talking about golf tournaments, you've been in the news recently, just the understatement of the year, about the Doral tournament going to Mexico. What's your take on that?
Well, I'm disappointed because Doral has gotten rave reviews. You know, I blew up Doral. Mm-hmm. Gil Hance was the architect, and we blew it up. And it's an incredible piece of property, 800 acres right in the middle of Miami. And we built a course using similar sight lines, et cetera, but a brand new course in every way and at the highest levels of golf. And the players loved it. Sadly, you know, Mexico made an offer that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And Mexico's taking a lot of our businesses. The players are unhappy about it.
But part of the issue was that, you know, they felt that it was difficult to compete, you know, for major sponsors in the tournament, to compete with the Trump brand, with that name. Did you ever consider, you know, perhaps sponsoring the tournament by yourself?
Usually people that do that want recognition for their name, their brand, their company.
Right.
And I don't need too much recognition.
Not at the minute. No.
So, you know, they didn't really talk too much about that. They did want to stay. The tour was, they were gentlemen. They came up to my office and they told me, and they were total gentlemen. But I expect that we'll have tournaments back there very soon.
Well, when you run for president, your platform is at least in some part built around the sum of your life. For those that don't know your story, how did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Queens. And my father was a builder. He built houses and middle-income apartments in Brooklyn and Queens, mostly. And I went to the Wharton School of Finance. We had a great time there. Came out, went to work for my father for 4 or 5 years. Wanted to come to Manhattan because we were in Brooklyn and Queens, and I wanted to come. And my father said, that's not our territory. No, we shouldn't. But he, and my father was great, by the way. He was a great guy to me. He was really my mentor, my best friend. and came into Manhattan, and I really hit pay dirt. I built the Grand Hyatt Hotel, which was a big hit. I redid the convention center. The convention center, the Jacob Javits Convention Center, was my deal. I got that one going. And built many buildings in Manhattan, including this one, Trump Tower.
You wrote that you were interested in creating mischief as a child. Seems like that hasn't worn off.
Well, I was a little like you, I think, you know. Probably we wouldn't have been. We would have been great friends in the first grade. But, no, I was a little bit mischievous. Mm-hmm. And, but I had a great time.
Your father sent you off to the New York Military Academy in 1959.
And it was great for me, I'll tell you. We had some sergeants, some real tough cookies. There was no games. You know, when you gave them a little smirk, it was not a pretty picture.
Right.
And I thought it was great. Not at the time, but just looking back. It was tough. And I think it probably had a very positive impact on my life.
His character may have been sculpted by his parents and the military academy, but as his campaign for commander-in-chief has evolved from the primary to the general election, his persona has been increasingly influenced by his three eldest children, Don, Ivanka, and Eric. They're not exactly hood ornaments on the Trump vehicle. They work for a living.
They do.
And they're all successful.
They do. They're very good. I have my three oldest children are in the business, Don, Ivanka, and Eric. And they have done great. I mean, they're really done great. If I won, I would put them in charge of the business, and who knows, maybe would even do better. But they have been outstanding. I have so many people that come to me, you know, where they have children that have difficulty. And they're smart. They're smart children, but they get into drugs or alcohol or something happens. And it's a tough go, and I'll talk to them. But my children have really been, I'm very proud of them.
There have been just a few negative things thrown at you over the last few months, and we're just kind of getting started in this presidential campaign. You've been described as thin-skinned, not presidential, unpredictable, kind of in a bad way, ill-tempered, inexperienced, authoritarian, bigoted, racist, and misogynistic. I don't even know what some of those words mean.
But other than that, they like me.
Yeah. But even with that, you know, there are a lot of people that sort of, they like you begrudgingly because you say what they're thinking.
Well, maybe so. You know, the words politically correct are so, it's just destroying so many different things. And I've seen people say things that are absolutely fine and they end up with front page articles. It's just so bad. It's dangerous out there. I mean, you can make a speech and do beautifully. The crowd's going wild. And then the next day you wake up to headlines because one word was a little bit out of joint. It's out of control. I mean, I live with it. I could be the most politically correct person in the world.
No, I doubt that.
No, I really could. I mean, it's actually easy.
Yeah.
It's actually easy to be politically correct, but sometimes you can't be. You know, it takes a lot of time to be politically correct.
Well, it takes a lot of courage to be just ordinarily correct.
Yeah, maybe that's true. But people are wanting that. I'm seeing it more and more. I mean, I think people are so tired of the nonsense that's going on. When you look at unemployment in this country, when you look at wages in this country, they haven't gone up in 18 years. Real wages haven't gone up in 18 years. And there's a tremendous thirst to have something take place. It's going to really bring the country back. The country's doing poorly. It's doing poorly. And we'll be able to do that.
Well, you know, the first time that I spoke to you, I asked you if it bothered you that people thought that you were an asshole. You know, and based on the polls, there are significant numbers of people who might still think, you know, that you're a bit of an eye-hole. Does it bother you? I mean, are you less holy than you were before?
Well, I think I'm doing well. I did very well in the polls and the primaries. I led from beginning to end, and I'm doing well now. I haven't spent any money yet.
Well, I mean, I think that you...
But the problem is, if you get 50%, you're doing well. That means 50% of the people don't like you.
Well, when you consider, you know, the assholes that a president has to deal with, isn't it just prerequisite that he needs to be a bit that way himself?
Maybe so. In which case, perhaps I'll do very well.
Well, did you go into the... campaign with the idea of shaking up the Republican Party, certainly because...
No.
A
couple of people have said there's never been anything like this in the history of American politics. Many people, I mean, many of the pundits, even ones that don't like me, had one the other night who truly dislikes me. And he said it's the single greatest political phenomena that he's ever seen in his lifetime. And that's a great honor, but I want to go all the way. I mean, we have to go all the way. And to me, that's very important.
You know, I said before that you're willing to say some of the things that people wouldn't say in public, but do say in the privacy of their own houses. Can we tolerate who we really are, or should we tolerate who we are?
Well, I think you have to hold back a little bit. You know, what you say in your living room to somebody is maybe different than what you're going to say out on the stump or whatever. But you also want to be honest, and you don't want to be, you know, you want to be honest with people. But, you know, what has happened is people are afraid to speak. People are afraid to make decisions. Even decisions are made that are wrong decisions because they want to be popular, or some decisions cannot be popular. I mean, we have things going on right now in our country where decisions have to be tough decisions, and they have to be made by a leader. They might not necessarily be popular decisions. But the funny thing is, David, that people know when those decisions are right.
Do you think of yourself as a politician?
Or? No. I think that's why I'm winning, because if I did, I don't think I'd be winning.
You thrived in that environment, and I mean, just taking bombs from left, right, and center, it's like, you know, bring it on.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people would have withered under that kind of fire.
Yeah. Well, and they're smart people. You know, these are politicians. They did a study that, this was a few months ago, I was in it for 10 months. In other words, I was a politician since June 16th. So at that time, I was in it for 10 months, and they were in it for 212 years.
If you added up the experience.
So they were politicians and with experience of 212 years.
People are fed up with politicians.
They're fed up. Politicians will never, as we say, make America great again. That's what it's all about, make America great again. And they won't do it. So I think that's one of the reasons I'm having such success.
Well, this is a special rapid fire with Donald Trump. It's your clever answers to my inane questions. Start the clock, please. Boxers, briefs, or commando?
A boxer.
GM or Jaguar?
I say Jaguar.
Okay. Condo or co-op?
Condo.
Legs or breasts?
Ooh, I'll get myself in trouble politically. How about both?
McDonald's or Burger King?
I do really both. Yeah. I like them both. I think they're great.
Late to bed or early to rise?
I'm early to rise.
Yeah, you're late to bed these days as well.
I'm also late to bed. I'm late to bed and early to rise.
Favorite song?
I think anything with Elton John.
Yeah?
I love Elton John's music. I mean, but so many. I mean, just so many things.
Favorite movie?
Citizen Kane.
Good one. Guilty pleasure?
I can't tell you that.
Well, you're so guilty.
I will be out of... I'll be out of the world of politics.
You are so guilty. Well, that is rapid fire with Donald Trump, and as always, you win nothing.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Rate the following as fair or unfair. Mulligans.
I think it's fair if you're with a group of friends. I really do. You know, if you run to the course and you haven't hit a ball in a while, you can't warm up, and they give you a mulligan. I think it's a nice thing in golf, but obviously that's with friends.
Yeah. Offshore accounts.
Well, I don't use it, but I know plenty of people that do.
Okay. Political action committees.
I think we ought to be more open, and I don't think we should have any committees unless they're totally exposed as to who's in the committee.
Golf handicaps.
Golf handicapping is probably the one sport that I can think of that it really works, that you can play with somebody that's bad and just have a great time.
Yeah. Rate the following as good or bad. Profiling.
Well, I think it's becoming necessary. If you look at Israel, if you look at some other countries, I think it's becoming necessary.
Common sense.
It's not inaccurate, and it's frankly common sense. It's becoming more and more necessary, unfortunately.
Viagra? That's
well,
what it says here.
I wouldn't know about that, of course, but it keeps people going, right?
Yep. Alternative minimum tax?
Fine, but I'm changing the tax system under my plan. I'll be changing it. It's a good question, actually. It's a very interesting question, but I'll be changing the tax system.
Wall Street?
Really good. I mean, look, the jobs and everything else. You have some bad apples. You have some bad players. I know the good ones and the bad ones. And I'll tell you what, the good ones far outweigh the bad ones. But they do a lot of jobs.
Mass media?
Well, I find it very dishonest. I think that the media, to me, is one of the most dishonest groups of people I've ever dealt with. And I'm not talking about you.
Oh, well, no.
No, the media to me is, especially the political media, and especially if you're a Republican as opposed to a Democrat. A Democrat, it's a whole different world. They treat them much better. They want them. They want liberal Democrats. And, you know, it's sort of in this country. But I find the media to be extremely dishonest, and you have to just fight through it.
Tabloid journalism, kind of the same thing.
Pretty much. I mean, yeah. Pretty much. But again, you know, you have some pretty great tabloids. You look at the National Enquirer, the work that they've done over the years. They should have won the big prizes. They did the OJ deal. They did some pretty big deal.
And quite often, right?
So, but they didn't get recognized, but, you know, they did some pretty good work.
The campaign trail is so tough. Where do you find the energy?
I get that question. Maybe it's almost the question I get asked the most. You need a lot of energy. You have, yesterday, I had every major newscaster in my office doing interviews, and people say, where do you get it? I love doing what I do. You know, if you love it. I love doing what I do. And if you don't love, I say this to people all the time, you have to love what you do.
Yeah.
If you don't love it, David, you're never going to be good at it. You won't have the energy. You just won't have the energy.
Well,
but I've had energy because I like it.
Diet and exercise? I mean, running up and down the steps of, of your 737 would be a lot of exercise.
But not so much. I mean, not so much. I'd like to get more exercise. I don't play golf very much anymore because of this. You know, I've been a nice golfer over the years. I've had a lot of success playing golf, and I've met some of the best people. I've met some of the greatest people I know playing golf. I've made some great deals playing golf. I've made deals that I would have never made if I took people out to lunch instead of becoming friendly with them on a golf course. Seriously.
But you've lost some weight.
Including this building.
Not playing golf.
Well, you don't have time to eat. I mean, you don't have time to eat. Even this interview, I was running up and I said, oh, I wonder, what am I doing, David? And you're sitting in the apartment.
Well, what is a day on the road in terms of meals for you? You know,
it's not probably healthy, but I'm not sure I believe in that. You know, you eat, who knows? You know, they say, don't eat this food, don't eat that. Well, maybe those foods are good for you.
And then they change their minds 10 years
later. Then they change
their
mind after you've stuffed yourself in the wrong foods. But no, it's usually, we'll either have something made or we'll stop at fast food places and we'll eat. But the good thing about that, you know, these places are worth billions of dollars, and at least you know you're going to be okay. You know, you stop in a little restaurant someplace along the road, you don't know what you're getting.
Yeah.
So they can't afford to mess around. But the eating's always a problem. I would love to be able to play golf, but it's just very hard to do. And that was a form of exercise for me.
Yeah. Have you got to the stage where you might worry about, you know, getting a food taster in there? Somebody tries to slip something into...
Well, I never even thought about it until now. Now maybe I'll do it.
Well, beginning in the 20th century, presidents really sort of took to golf. Barack Obama played over 100 rounds in 2012. Eisenhower played 800 rounds during his tenure. George W. Bush played only 24 rounds. Woodrow Wilson played 1,000 rounds during his 8 years. How much golf is too much, you think, for a chief executive?
Obama plays a lot of golf, a lot. I was never one of his harsh critics on the golf, because if you play with people that you have to deal with, and I've said it a million times, you can make the best friends on the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
That I would not have made certain deals if it weren't for golf. Big deals. This building, I became friendly with the people, this is many years ago, that owned the site because of golf. And when it came time that where they were going to sell it, they really wanted to sell it to me.
Yeah.
I don't think you should play very much, but if you're going to play, you should use it to your advantage and the country's advantage. You want to play with people like Congress, you want the senators, you want to pass legislation, or you want to play with people from other countries.
And play with your enemies?
Yeah, even play with your enemies, and maybe your enemies become friends.
Are you going to be parking your jet at Andrews Air Force Base?
Well, I wouldn't be using my jet.
Well,
that would be a sad thing. But, you know, you have an obligation to use good old Air Force One. You know, they just bought a new Air Force One,
and
the price is over $3
billion. $3 billion with a B?
Think I could have negotiated a better deal than that?
I think you might have.
Maybe.
I got it for $2.5 billion. There'd probably be more gold on your airplane than there is on Air Force One.
Well, there is right now, but on Air Force One, it is what it is. But Air Force One does represent something very important for the country, so I understand that.
Now, you're going to be taking a serious pay cut.
That's true.
If you,
That's okay.
What is the average?
I'm bringing it down to $1.
Yeah, you are?
Yeah. I've said I only want a dollar.
Yeah.
Amazing the way some people have thought that was a wonderful gesture, but I only want $1.
And what about the White House? I mean, the decor here at Trump Tower, at your apartment, it's opulent.
Well, the White House is different, but you don't want to change very much. I mean, you want it to be tippy-top. You want it to be immaculate. You want it to be, and you can do certain things, but the White House represents something very special, so you don't want to do anything other than maintain it absolutely impeccably.
And who's in charge of that? Would be you or Melania?
I think Melania and myself.
Yeah.
I'm very much into that whole world and myself.
If you win, is it going to be difficult for you to disassociate yourself from your businesses?
Not at all. You know, I built a great company, but it's like a peanut compared to what we're talking about.
Right.
It's so important. I won't even be thinking about it. My children will run it. My executives will run it. It's a great company. It's not that hard to run, actually. It's a great company. Very little debt, great cash flows. But honestly, I'm not even going to be thinking about that. Yeah. This is such an important journey that, you know, you have a business, it's wonderful and all, but this is such an important journey.
What's been the hardest part about this journey running?
Maybe the hours, because you start early in the morning. I mean, you alluded to it, and you end up coming home sometime at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning from some faraway place. So the hours are long, but I have very good energy, and I can handle that. But that's part of it. You're away from your family. You know, a lot of people think I get on the jet and I fly right back home every night. I don't do that. I stay at different places, and some of them aren't particularly luxurious, but but you know what I usually ask for is new. Just give me new. Any place that's new.
Yeah.
And I like it. And some of them are amazingly good. I mean, if I stayed at the best hotel in the world and some of these places, to me, there'd be no difference. You know, they're immaculate.
They have bad.
I need new. I need good televisions. You know, clean.
Yeah.
Clean is what I want. Yeah. But some of the places you could put me, I won't name hotels because I know everybody that owns them.
Yeah.
And I own them. But some of the best hotels in the world, there'd be no difference to me.
What's the best part about running?
Well, I just think it's so important what's happening. And at a minimum, I've gotten a very, very important message out there about what's happening to our country. And I think that's the best part. From my standpoint, it's not the adulation. It's not any of that. It's really the fact that I've gotten such an important message out, whether it's illegal immigration, whether it's our military is depleted, whether it's things relating to ISIS. I mean, there's so many different things. But got a lot of words out there that people never even discussed until now.
Bear with me a moment. I want to read you a quote here from our 26th president, Theodore Roosevelt. We should insist that if the immigrant who comes here does so in good faith, become an American and assimilates himself to us, he shall be treated on an exact equality with everyone else, for it is an outrage to discriminate against any such man because of creed or birthplace or origin. But this is predicated upon the man's becoming in very fact an American. And nothing but an American. If he tries to keep segregated with men of his own origin and separated from the rest of America, then he isn't doing his part as an American.
100%. Very well said. In fact, you'll give me that later.
I'm
going to use that in my next speech. No, that's true. And we have people coming into the country that don't even like us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we don't know what's going on. We don't know where it's going to lead. And we have to do something about it. And a lot of people are liking what I say, but that is very well stated.
Well, you've loved sports for years. You've been involved in golf and football and cycling. Why does a real estate guy get involved in sports the way you have?
Well, I just love sports. I've always loved it. I can be anything. It could be a sport that I turn on that I never play, and it doesn't matter. I love sports. I love the competition. I love watching competition of great sports people. The good thing is there's plenty of it on television. I mean, I watched recently the NBA game with LeBron James. He was great. A real champion, good guy, real champion. And it's wonderful to see Jordan Spieth do so well because he won the USGA Junior Championship at Bedminster. And my club where we have now the Women's US Open is coming this following year. And so we have that. And in 22, we have the PGA Championship.
Yes. I'm a big bicycle fan. And what got you interested in staging the Tour de Trump cycle race? Because it really took off.
It did. It took off great. And but ultimately, when the economy crashed, I said, well, let's hold it back. Because the economy had literally crashed. But it was very successful. I could probably have that again. But I was never a big bicycle person. But I had a thing called the Tour de Trump. I'm surprised you'd even know that. And it went through various places of New York State. And it was great. And I'll tell you, those are great athletes.
Oh, they're amazing athletes. And you've had an interest in Olympic sports. This is an Olympic year. Did you ever aspire to become an Olympic athlete? Track and field, you know, the 100-meter insulting?
Well, I did aspire. I wanted to run in the Olympics, the 100-yard dash, until the first time I ran and realized I was very, very slow. So that was the end of my Olympic career.
Yeah. My grandfather, I think, would have won a medal in the 1912 games, catching the javelin.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's right. It'll be interesting to see how golf does in the Olympics. I mean, to me, that's very interesting. I think it's a great thing. I think that the folks that got that in, and I know it was Peter Dawson and Ty Votaw and others. They work very, very hard. It's going to be very interesting to see. I think it's a great thing for golf, having it in the Olympics.
Yeah, and it's turned into an interesting sort of political and sociological sort of problem with the security and the Zika virus and people.
It is so sad what's going on. I mean, you look at the waterways, how horrible it is. And I mean, it's just sad. I hope it works out, but we're going
to
see.
I have the sense that everyone's addicted to something. What are you addicted to?
Food.
Food?
I love food.
Have you ever used recreational drugs?
It's just something that I've never been involved with. When I was going to college, people were doing the marijuana thing and they were doing drugs and they thought it was very cool. And it's tremendous pressure. But I lost my brother years ago. I wish I could have got him. He had a problem with alcohol. But I wish I could have been able to stop him from that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to. And my family tried. I've learned so much from my brother. My brother was really, in a sense, a mentor because I've learned so much from him and through his experiences. So I don't drink. And I say no drugs, no alcohol, no smoking to my kids. I say it so much. I said it to my daughter when she was little, all my kids, when they were like 3 years old, I started saying it. No drugs, no alcohol, no smoking. Mm-hmm. And after a while, they go, I can't stand it anymore. You know, they're like four.
Yeah.
They didn't even know what these things were. But I drummed it in and... you know, I think it had a good impact.
I know this is completely unthinkable to you, you know, but what happens if you don't win? What's next? What would you do if you weren't the president of the United States?
Well, I'd learn that life is a lot simpler.
Yeah.
Because this is complicated stuff. I mean, between the tremendous amounts of security and all of the things that go into doing this and really the work. I mean, you make a speech. I made four speeches in front of massive audiences one day last week. Four in one day. One in the morning, one in the early afternoon, then two right after that. And I said, this is not humane, okay?
Yeah,
that's crazy. Cool. If I didn't win, I wouldn't be taking so many calls. I might not do your show ever again because honestly, I'd literally, it would be so different. And in one way, you long for that life. That's okay too.
Yeah.
I think I get along very well. And there's always that possibility. I mean, very good chance that could happen. I think we're going to do great because I see there's a fervor out there that's incredible.
How would you like to be remembered?
Well, really as somebody that's done a great job. I've taken care of a lot of people. I've put a lot of thousands and thousands of people, tens of thousands of people to work, tens of thousands. And therefore, indirectly, I guess, paid for education, paid for healthcare, paid for so many things. You know, I've made life very happy for tens of thousands of people. And, you know, I think I've done a very good job.
Well, you are definitely going to be remembered. Never forgotten, I suspect, and part of the history of this country now. Thank you so much
for
spending this time with me again, Donald. Thank you
very much. Great honor.
Well, that's our show. Make tomorrow a better day. The world always looks better from the first tee. Follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Fair Twitter. Good night, sweetie.
You do a good job.
Oh, okay.
I've had people where the interviews are, they don't have a clue. It's true. I sit here, and they're big names you all know, and it's like...
Yeah, a couple of them you've let them know as well.